Rolling.
This is the Fed Sock Films Podcast,
where we continue the conversation sparked on film.
Quiet on set.
You want to know what freedom tastes like? It tastes like this beer.
Take one.
This is, in fact, the classic solution in search of a problem.
Action.
That cannot help but be controversial.
Cut.
With expert discussion and analysis.
With the greatest legal minds on the topic today.
The Fed Sock Films Podcast.
It's a wrap.
Back in March of 2020, I remember hearing on the radio about how California was entering lockdown. It seemed so far distant at the time that I was certain it wouldn't affect me. Of course, I was wrong. What happened was like something out of an apocalypse. Empty shelves, closed churches, crowded hospitals, deserted streets. Nobody knew what to expect. We were all walking blind. Hey there, and welcome to the FedSoc Films Podcast. I'm Anne Hartley, your retrospective host. We recently released a film about how the different states dealt with the COVID pandemic, focusing on the emergency declarations in Wisconsin. I have with me Rick Esenberg, a Wisconsin native and the founder and president of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, to offer his perspective on the state's pandemic response. Welcome, Rick.
Thanks for having me on. Hello.
Good to have you. So I'm curious what the first few months of COVID were like in Wisconsin in particular.
Well, I think we were surprised. I remember thinking that there was no way that our government was actually going to tell us that we couldn't leave our homes without an excuse. And we went from the governor telling us, even as it was happening in other states, that he would never do it here. And then within several days, he did it. And I think after a period of being sort of stunned and maybe a little angry, people began to approach us and say, well, what are you going to do about this? I mean, can this really happen? You know, can we really be confined to our homes when, you know, we ourselves have not been, diagnosed as having some type of infectious disease?
Gotcha. So what exactly did Governor Evers do there?
Well, Governor Evers did something that became fairly typical. He issued a stay-at-home order. It then had a series of reasons for you to be able to leave your house. You could leave if you had a certain type of job that was deemed to be essential. You could leave to run certain errands. Otherwise, you were to stay at home. And the order was patterned after the ones that we had begun to see in so many states in the middle of March 2020. He did that by invoking a provision in the statutes which allows the governor to declare an emergency. Now, the emergency can be a public health emergency, but it could be many other things. In this instance, he declared a public health emergency. Under our statutes, a declared emergency lasts for 60 days. And during the pendency of that emergency, the governor can enter any order to protect persons or property. So it's really an extraordinary grant of authority during that 60-day period. And the governor invoked that period, and he issued this stay-at-home order.
Gotcha. So that does sound very significant. How would you say that declaration of emergency stacks up against other Midwestern state governors?
I think it's not unusual for states to have a power like this. Our state does have some outs. So the governor can declare this emergency. It's time limited, but as we may discuss later, that came to be an issue as the pandemic wore on. So it's time limited to 60 days. And during that 60-day period, it can be rescinded by a joint resolution of the legislature. So there are some safeguards. It's not clear that those safeguards work very well in a situation like the COVID pandemic, where there was a great deal of uncertainty and a great deal of fear. And so we were left with this lockdown order and with an organization like ours, getting a lot of inquiries from people essentially asking us, can he do that?
So what happened from there?
Well, what happened from there is as we began to evaluate the thing, it would be a mistake to move too fast and too aggressively. And in part, that was because in the early days of the pandemic, nobody knew what was going on. Case counts were rising very quickly. There, certainly it became apparent that this was a serious disease. There were projections being made that it would become much more serious, sort of catastrophic in a way that none of us could imagine. And our concern was that if someone blustered into court and began to assert liberty rights to be free of this type of restraint, that in all likelihood, bad law would be made. Right? We're all familiar with the 1905 Supreme Court decision out of Massachusetts, which apparently appeared to endorse broad powers on the part of the executive in a public health emergency. And so, you know, my mantra early on in the pandemic was that we should be very, very careful about asserting liberty interests. What I repeatedly said back then is if we go to court and we're talking epidemiology, we're losing because it was extremely unlikely that any judge anywhere was going to, at that point, second guess public health officials and countermand these emergency measures without some clear authority supporting whatever it was the court was asked to do.
Gotcha. So I know you guys did eventually end up getting involved. What led to that?
There were a few odds and ends that happened initially where, you know, we were able to assert liberty claims. I mean, there was, there was a sheriff that came to a teenage girl's house and threatened to arrest her because she had posted on social media that she was recovering from COVID. And he said, well, you don't have a positive COVID test, even though doctors had told her that yes, she had COVID. We thought that that was created some First Amendment problems. At one point, there were some local municipalities that banned drive-in services for Easter. So these were Easter services in which you would drive to your church's parking lot. You would not get out of your car. You would not roll the window down. You would be in your car with your fellow congregants and, you know, listen to this service by, you know, on your phone or something like that. And there were some municipalities that started to try to ban that, and we moved against that. But the thing that I think really started off an extraordinary series of litigation was that I mentioned earlier that these emergency powers that the governor possesses are only good for 60 days. The 60-day period was coming to an end. It was going to expire in early May of 2020. And the governor wanted to continue his stay-at-home order, but he was running out of time. And so what he decided to do was instruct his Department of Health Services to issue an order under a sort of vague statutory authorization to the Secretary of DHS to take steps to combat infectious disease, to have her issue an order that would continue, essentially, with some modifications, this lockdown, and to do so indefinitely. And once again, I mean, this was fairly early on in the pandemic. This was late April. We felt that to assert a liberty claim would be wrong, but we put out a statement almost immediately that said, look, here's the problem. It may be that the Secretary of Health Services has the authority to issue an order, but to issue an order that would apply statewide for an indefinite period of time and essentially prescribe a set of rules under which people must live and with respect to which they could face criminal prosecution should they not follow them, that if that's what's going to be done, this Secretary of Health Services needs to follow the rulemaking process. And so, you know, Wisconsin, like the federal government, really like probably all states, has notice and comment rulemaking. And so if a certain type of discretionary authority is delegated to an executive officer, sometimes the only way that they can exercise that is by promulgating a rule, telling the public, this is the rule that we want to have. We're going to give you a period to comment on it. We're going to have an appropriate procedure, and then we will or we will not promulgate a final rule, or we will modify it in some way. And the Secretary of Health Services didn't do that. They simply issued an order. Now, an order might be appropriate for a particular circumstance. I want to close this slaughterhouse because it's unsanitary. I want to, move against, this particular restaurant because there's been some type of outbreak of salmonella. But this was something that was going to apply statewide to anybody, and you could go to jail if you didn't follow it. And so we put that statement out, and eventually the legislature brought a lawsuit against the governor, and that's what became Legislature versus Palm.
No kidding. Was it unusual for a legislature to file a lawsuit in its own name? Is that something that happens a lot?
No, it's not something that happens a lot. But in this instance, the legislature argued that the harm, and a decision really was made to have the legislature bring this because the harm was to the legislature because it was deprived of its right to legislate in this area and to conduct oversight over the rulemaking process. I mean, one of the things that happens when you have rulemaking in Wisconsin is that there is a joint committee of the legislature, JCRAR, which can take a particular proposed rule and suspend it under certain circumstances. And so the whole idea here was it not to assert a liberty claim, not to say that people have a right to be, free of a stay-at-home or a lockdown order, but to say that if we are going to do a lockdown order, now that we are past the 60-day emergency period under the statutes, that we must return to regular constitutional order. We must have rulemaking to broaden public participation. And so let's give the public notice of what we're doing. Let's give the public an opportunity to be heard. And, let's require the requisite findings that rulemaking generally involves. And let's give the legislature the opportunity to conduct appropriate oversight as our Administrative Procedures Act requires. And so that case was litigated very quickly. It was brought as an original action, which is something that we have in the state of Wisconsin. What you can do is you can bring in the state Supreme Court what is called an original action. And there is provision to do that with the United States Supreme Court, but in Wisconsin, it's a much more broader jurisdictional grant to the court. It's discretionary. The court can take it or not. It's been rarely used, although it's been used a lot lately, and my organization used it a lot. We were an amicus in this case. We were not the plaintiffs. But the court took the case as an original action, had prompt argument, and then in somewhere around mid-May, I think, of 2020, it decided that, in fact, the Secretary of Health Services was required to proceed by rulemaking and essentially invalidated the stay-at-home order. Now, if I remember correctly, I think the court stayed this invalidation of the order for a period of a week, which is a little odd, but that's what it did. And to give the governor an opportunity to instruct the Secretary of DHS to implement a rulemaking procedure and a rulemaking process. And what happened is that the governor initially did that, but then withdrew the rule, arguing that, well, those Republicans in the legislature, because, this is the dynamic we had in Wisconsin, still have it, where you have a Democratic governor and you have both houses of the legislature controlled by the Republicans. He said those Republicans will simply thwart my rulemaking. They'll block it through legislative oversight. And so I'm not even going to try. I thought that was an odd thing for the governor to do. If you really feel there's an emergency, if you really feel that the public is in danger from an infectious disease such that you need to have some type of lockdown order, why wouldn't you proceed and, you know, essentially challenged the Republicans to stop you and to say, look, we won't go along with this lockdown order, and then engage in appropriate negotiations. But the governor didn't do that. So Wisconsin became the first state, and I think it may be the only state that opened up by court order.
Yeah, it really does sound like an extraordinary situation all around, and a lot of back and forth between the governor and the legislature.
It really was. You know, when I look back at the pandemic period, and, you know, this was just the first major case of a number of major cases over the next year or so. It was kind of unbelievable to me how fast and furious the litigation came. Just really, really important issues about structural limits on the power of government, because in this instance and in other instances in which we were involved and that other people were involved, and we in particular, very rarely asserted a liberty interest. And there were some cases in which there were religious free exercise issues. I mentioned that there was a First Amendment issue that arose shortly after the outbreak of COVID. But typically, our emphasis was on structural limits on the power of government. And there would generally, in these cases, be a statutory argument where we'd say, look, you know, somebody has exceeded his or her authority here. This isn't the way that the statutes provide for emergency action. And then there was always lurking in the background, and this is particularly the brief that we wrote in Legislature versus Palm, that we kept raising this constitutional issue of non-delegation. People that listen to Federalist Society podcasts are probably fairly familiar with the doctrine of non-delegation on the federal level, where, you know, there's at least theoretically some limits on the ability of Congress to delegate its legislative authority to administrative agencies. It has not been a doctrine that has often been used successfully, and a lot of people say it had a good year, but back in the 30s. But, you know, there certainly is, I think, increasingly interest expressed on the part of the justices in making something of it. Now, Wisconsin actually doesn't have much of a non-delegation doctrine. It has tended to focus on process protections, but, you know, we have started to develop a series of briefs and arguments that said, look, we need to go back to this concept of non-delegation. And procedural rules are fine, but they're not enough. And so if, in fact, you know, we have a statutory scheme that actually allows the Secretary of Health Services to issue orders, basically indefinitely making rules for the state of Wisconsin, then that executive official has essentially usurped the legislature's legislative authority. Legislative authority is exclusively vested in the legislature. And court, if you're going to read the statute this way, you need to go back and resurrect this non-delegation doctrine, because that's simply a violation of separation of powers. As it turned out, in each of these cases, we never really got to the constitutional question, because we or our side tended to win on statutory grounds. And that's certainly what happened in Legislature versus Palm.
Gotcha. Well, it sounds like your deliberate strategy there paid off for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think the lesson for, you know, litigators in this area is sometimes you have to, you can't sort of follow a strategy of, you know, ready, fire, aim, right? You have to be very intentional about what's likely to work, what's likely not to work, and how, in a situation where the politics are convoluted and there's a great deal of stress on the system, you don't want to do something that will actually make the law worse. And I think if we had gone over and we had gone in and said, look, you know, people have a liberty interest to be free from lockdowns, we would have succeeded in creating bad law. And that didn't happen. Instead, we made good law.
Well, always good to hear. Well, thanks for joining us today, Rick. You've really shed some light on this situation here with Legislature versus Palm and COVID in Wisconsin. And thank you to our audience for listening in. You can find our film, Pandemic Powers, Wisconsin State of Emergency, on our YouTube channel or at fedsoc.org. That's FEDSOC.org. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. That's a wrap.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.